Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
And I'm Carol Van Dam, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, December 30th, 2015. Another traditional chief in Wau is gunned down, and authorities don't know who did it.
SEPO strongly urged the state authority to investigate and bring any person behind the killing of the chief to the book. SEPO also appealed to the state authority to enforce protection of the chiefs.
And South Sudanese are reportedly targeted in Kampala after a popular singer is shot dead.
They told her that one of their friends was killed there in Wise, and they say that it's a Sudanese who killed the guy, but we are not sure about it. They have beaten many people here, many Sudanese here, and we don't think it is safe for us to be here.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
Wau County authorities say they're looking for unidentified gunmen who killed a traditional chief of Basri Payam Monday evening. Eyewitnesses say the attackers shot Chief John Mahum at his house. It is the third attack on an area chief in the past 7 months, as we hear from Michael Atit in Wau.
In May this year, unknown gunmen killed Paramount Chief Angelo Bagari and his wife. And in September, another chief escaped an assassination attempt. Brinji John Mahum, the elder son of the late chief, describes what happened the night his father was killed. Speaking in Arabic, Brinji Mahum says he heard the sound of gunfire at his father's house about 7:30 Monday night. He ran to the house and says he found his father had been shot 3 times in his chair. His mother told him that 4 armed men came to the house, and one of them suggested that they tie up his father, but one of the other gunmen shot him instead. Mahum says he is not aware of any conflict or misunderstanding between his father and anyone. He is calling on the authorities to do everything in their power to bring the assailants to justice. A youth of Busere Payam, Santino Mateo, who says he knew the late chief, describes his death as a big loss to the community. Speaking in Arabic, Mateo says the late chief was really a man respected by all. He says he loved everybody and he was a man of God. Mateo says he used to say that everywhere he goes, he is like an ocean. Stephen Robo Musa, state coordinator for local NGO Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or SEPO, reacted strongly to the chief's murder.
Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, SEPO, in the state condemns the shameless and the barbaric assassination of chief in the strongest term as possible. No one has any right to take life of someone unlawfully, no matter what the case may be.
John Mahum is the second chief to be assassinated in the area this year. Musa is calling on the state government officials to take a swift action against the attackers.
SEPO strongly urges the state authority to investigate and bring any person behind the killing of the chief to the book. SEPO also appealed to the state authority to enforce protection of the chiefs.
Speaking at the late chief's funeral yesterday, Wau County authorities say an investigation is underway and they will do everything in their power to track down Chief Mahum's killers. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
South Sudanese living in two Kampala suburbs are staying indoors for a second straight day after some of them were attacked by Ugandans following the death of a popular local singer. Several houses were burned and an unknown number of people were injured in a series of attacks by motorists known as Boda Boda. Uganda police are warning Ugandans not to take the law into their own hands. The state-owned New Vision newspaper reports that a stray bullet shot by a police officer hit the singer. Uganda police spokesman Patrick Unyango told reporters yesterday that a police officer has been arrested in connection with the investigation. But many angry supporters of the artist insist that South Sudanese are to blame for his death. 19-year-old James Ayun says he took a commercial motorcycle with his friend from Kampala Center back home in Bwazi, a suburb south of the city. Ayun says at Bwazi Center, they were confronted by a mob.
When we turned, we get many people on the road. Then they were making noise everywhere, in front of us and behind of us. Well, they tried to stop the motorbike, but we told that guy, no, don't stop, you go straight. After that, there were many on the way, so they kicked the guy, so they beat the guy until the piki-piki fell down. All of us were, three of us there down.
Ayuan says his friend, Dut Jacob, escaped unhurt, but he was not so lucky. He says he was ambushed by an angry mob who nearly killed him.
After that, I didn't remember what happened again until I find myself in the police car. That way I start gain my conscience.
Ayuan says police rescued him from the angry crowd and his relatives took him to a medical facility for a cut to his forehead. He was also bruised on many other parts of his body. According to Ugandan media, the local singer, known as Master Blast, died of injuries he sustained Monday night in a nightclub during the scuffle between South Sudanese and Ugandans. Ayuan has lived in Uganda for many years. He says he's remaining indoors for fear of being attacked again.
They told her that one of their friends was killed there in Wise, and they say that it's a Sudanese who killed the guy, but we are not sure about it. They have beaten many people here, many Sudanese here, and we don't think it is safe for us to be here.
There is no official confirmation on the number of South Sudanese injured. The South Sudanese embassy in Kampala has not commented on this story. Local television station NTV showed video footage of a South Sudanese rented home that was set ablaze yesterday. Many South Sudanese families rent houses in Kampala and other parts of Uganda where their children go to school. The number has increased over the last few years following the conflict that erupted in 2013. Philip Thon Aleo compiled that report for VOA from his hiding place in Kampala.
Security personnel have detained journalist Joseph Afandi, an editor at the month-old Arabic daily El Tabir in Juba. Afandi was detained yesterday for allegedly criticizing the government, according to Alfred Taban, chairperson of the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, or AMDIS. Taban says the government is very angry about an article which was published shortly before Christmas, in which the editor accused the government officials of not doing their jobs. Taban says plainclothes security personnel detained Afandi last night. He says the security officials refused to produce any identification. Taban says up to now, they do not know which branch of security detained Afandi. Taban says the paper has been ordered to stop publication. Ramadan Chadar, who is in charge of media security for the South Sudanese government, told Taban they would look into the issue once the government offices reopen after the New Year's holiday season.
So at this point, it's not clear exactly who is holding him. As I said, I talked to the third man in the security, Brigadier General Ramadan Chadar, and he denied that his people are holding this journalist. He told me that they don't need to hide if they are holding him. They'll definitely tell me. So I think it is not the national security that is holding him.
Taban says Afandi could be held by the police or military intelligence. He also says he expects Afandi will be released sometime tomorrow. This comes just one day after the Committee to Protect the Journalists listed South Sudan as one of the most dangerous countries to work as a journalist. CPJ has confirmed the death of five journalists in South Sudan this year alone. This has placed South Sudan on CPJ's database for the first time this year as the fifth most dangerous country for journalists, a rank the country has tied with Yemen, Iraq, and Bangladesh. But Taban says despite working through a tumultuous year, the conditions for journalists in South Sudan are slowly improving.
Because in the past, they would confiscate newspapers, they would intimidate journalists, but now at least they don't do that very much. If they take somebody for questioning, he is usually released the same day.
Taban is expecting Afandi to be released without harm sometime tomorrow.
Church leaders say gunmen gang-raped a foreign nun and looted property belonging to the Catholic Diocese of Tambora Yambio in western Equatoria State on Monday night. VOA fellow Tito Justin looked into the report and has more from Washington.
Father Iku Raphael Chancellor, an administrator for the Tombora Diocese, says the armed men broke into the community of Solidarity, a South Sudanese primary teachers' training college where most of the staff running the center are located. Father Raphael says the gunmen took two vehicles, three laptops, a digital camera, and over 30,000 South Sudanese pounds. He says, beside gang raping the nun, whose condition is unknown at this time, the gunmen also assaulted other staff at the diocese. He called the attack barbaric.
The Catholic Diocese of Tombora Yambio strongly condemned this activity, but we continue to appeal the community to be calm, and we continue to advocate for peace so that once again we come back to live as God intended for us.
The identity of the gunmen is unknown. There had been reports of a battle between the government and groups of gunmen in the state over the past few months. The church was trying to mediate how to end the conflict. Last month, one of the groups signed a preliminary agreement with the government, but the gunmen are still at large. Charles Kisanga, the leader of the Aru Boys in western Equatoria State, says the vigilant armed group the church is mediating with are not under his command. Kisanga blames the church and the government for failing to reach a permanent peace agreement, which he says is causing all the insecurity in the state. Kisanga says his vigilant group is part of the SPLMIO and are in Juba respecting the peace agreement to end the conflict. He says he tried to convince one of the vigilant commanders to work with him, but he refused.
I've tried to woo them back to join us, but one of the commanders refused, and he's hanging out there and causing havoc. The church should know that a movement have a leadership, because now they've left some people hanging out in the streets and causing insecurity to the civilians.
So far, no one has been apprehended for the Monday attack. Father Raphael says the government is investigating and looking for the perpetrators.
The government is trying its best. The local the police and the security are trying their best to find out those who have done this and maybe rescue the properties that have been collected here in Yambio headquarters.
Church leaders declined to elaborate on the condition of the nun who was sexually assaulted. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Questions about the SPLMIO advance team's right to move around Juba. That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could go to university anywhere, where would you go?
I would go to Oxford University, because I think from there I can meet international students, I can meet the best lecturers around and professors around.
In Harvard, because it has a good quality of education.
Makelele in Uganda is the best university I would choose, because for the recent years it has been named the best university in Africa.
University of Malawi, I think they offer nice programs.
Europe and Germany in particular welcoming Africans like me. So for me, I think I would feel much comfortable to go to a university in Germany than going elsewhere.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. A community leader at the United Nations Protection of Civilians site in Juba is calling on the SPLMIO advance team in the capital to visit them at their IDP camp in Juba. As VOA fellow Tito Justin reports, Riak Mishar's spokesman says their advance team has not visited the IDPs because of what he calls reasons beyond their control.
IDP leader Kubom Kubong's call for a visit from the SPLMIO advance team comes 1 week after the first wave of SPLMIO representatives arrived in Juba. The group is discussing with the government how to form a transitional government of national unity, which is now supposed to be in place by the end of January. Despite my advance team's arrival in Juba, officially began the implementation of the August Peace Accord. Kubom says the IDPs need to know that their suffering at the UN camp will soon come to an end.
Actually, I don't feel free as long as these are the very people that we were waiting for. And if they can't, it should be good that if they can reach us here in IDP camp so that we have more things that we can acquire from them. There are some contents in the fish that we need them to explain to us clearly.
Kubom says he and the others at the camp are still afraid to leave their camps because of ongoing insecurity. Machar spokesman James Gadet says the Espelemayo advance team in Juba failed to visit the IDPs because they were restricted from doing so.
We are not refusing to visit them. They are our people. They have been suffering for a very long time. The issue is that when our team attempted to visit them the day after their arrival in Juba, the Office of the United Nations in Juba advised them not to do so for security reasons.
This program tried but was unable to reach enemies for comment. Gadet says discussions continue between the SPLMO advance team and the United Nations on how the team in Juba will be able to visit the IDPs.
The latest information I received was that there was a coordination going on between the Office of the United Nations, the SPLMIO leadership in Juba, and the leadership of the IDP. I don't know today how far they progress in this, but I'm sure the meeting will take place very soon in the next few days.
According to ANMIS, there are more than 185,400 civilians seeking safety in six different UN protection civilian sites across the country. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
South Sudan is closer to attaining peace and long-term stability, but the country still has a long way to go. According to Sarah Clita Rial, founder of the Boston-based nonprofit Global Partnerships for Peace in South Sudan, or GAPS, Clito's nonprofit hosted peace conferences in the U.S. and has written letters to leaders like Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan of Western Bahr el-Ghazal State to voice their concerns this year. Clito says small acts like letter writing, even if they go unanswered, can help pressure leaders to address human rights violations and lack of services in South Sudan. I spoke to Clito yesterday about her critique of 2015 and her outlook for the coming year.
It's the year that we really come together as South Sudanese and say that, okay, let's put the war aside and let's start building peace. People were really very active in terms of the peace negotiations. That was really a positive move, which actually this year brought to us the agreement on the resolution of the conflicts in South Sudan. Even though it was met with a lot of bumps along the way,
one of the big news that came towards the end of the year is President Kiir's decree of 28 states and also the appointment of 28 governors. Do you think that this decree helps or hurts peace for South Sudan?
Well, in my personal opinion, even though I heard it's been echoed a lot, yeah, it was a Christmas surprise that really hurt the peace agreement. And one of the things that we have, like since December 2012, and I'm not saying 2013, December 2012, we haven't seen a very peaceful Christmas. We haven't celebrated Christmas or the end of the year really happily. For me personally, I feel this hurts the peace process more than helping it, because the agreement was based on the 10 states, and if it were to be implemented to the final or the all the words that are in the book, I believe that would have really brought peace to South Sudan.
And Sarah, GAPS was one of the groups that sent a letter earlier this month addressed to Rizik Zakaria, addressing the atrocities that have been inflicted on civilians in the state by the National Army. Did you receive a response?
No, we did not receive a response at all. And this is not the first letter, and we have been reaching out to our leaders who are there to represent the people. But in fact, we realize that the leaders there, they are only there for themselves. They are not for the people. Since December 2012, our people, especially people who come from the Wau County, have been a target of the government, specifically led by the Governor of Western Bahr al-Ghazal, Rizik Zakaria. He has been all his policies have been not in favor of the people of Wau County. People have been tortured. People have been jailed. There are others who are still in jail since December 2012. There were people who were sentenced to death. We don't know what happened with their fate. And the atrocities have continued.
Speaking about Zakaria, he's just been appointed governor of the newly created Lowell State with the Christmas Eve decree. What are your expectations for him in the coming year? Do you think he has the political will to create policies in Lowell State to mirror the needs and demands of his constituents?
I am not very optimistic if he's going to bring any changes, but would be good if he can really listen to the people and just at least do what the people are asking him, not to give people one promise here and go to the other side and do something else. I hope that he changes his policies with this new appointment and that the people welcome him. We hope that this new year, 2016, becomes a year of peace, that we are doing things that we said we would do.
That was Sarah Clita Rial of the Global Partnerships for Peace in South Sudan speaking to me here in Washington.
A South Sudanese former soldier quit serving in the South Sudan Army in 2008, is now self-employed. Deng Arok Mabior says he earns more money for his family shining shoes than he ever did serving as a soldier. Jacob Achek reports from Bor.
A 46-year-old Deng Arok has an obsession with leather. He says he loves polishing a nice pair of leather shoes. His shoes shining shop is usually crowded with people waiting to get their shoes polished by Mabior. Clients patiently sit their favorite South Sudanese tea as they wait their turn. Shoes China makes a plenty of money in Bor because residents love to have polished shoes in the dusty Bor market. Arok stay busy because he only charge a small fee for polishing their pair of shoes. Speaking in Dinga, Arok says he makes about 150 South Sudanese pound a day, so he can give his family about 50 pound for food and give the children about 600 South Sudanese pound a month for school. Arok says he loves his work because it is what he does to earn money for his family of five. Just 2 years after starting his shoe shining business, Arok has been able to help other residents of Bor as well. He says he used part of his saving to buy a large generator that supply electricity to shop owners in Bor market. Arok says when he saved £50,000, he went to Juba and bought a big generator and some other goods, then come back and construct a shop in Langbar and open a phone charging center. He says after the crisis broke out, everything was looted. His shop, which is usually open from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., saved around 70 customers a day. Arok pays 400 South Sudanese pounds a month to rent his job space. He encouraged fellow Bor residents to compete with Ugandan and Kenyan, who he says does just about what kind of work to earn money in South Sudan. He says it's important to learn a skill like shoe shining because life now under the current government is not good. Arok says salaries may not be paid for 2 months, and the people may suffer. So it's important to know handwork. Deng Arok left the army just a month after the Comprehensive Peace Agreement was signed in 2005. He then joined a prison service department in 2006 under the ranks of Sergeant Major. In 2008, he quit his job at the prison department because his salaries was not enough to take care of his family of five. Arok decided to sell one of his bull for 1,000 South Sudanese pound to have enough capital to start his cheese tanning business. Arok says one day he hoped to buy a land and build his own shop. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
Here is a recap of today's top stories. Wau County authorities say they're looking for unidentified gunmen who have killed a traditional chief, Abusue Payam, Monday evening. Eyewitnesses say that the attackers shot Chief John Mafhum at his home. It is the third attack on an area chief in the past 7 months alone. South Sudanese living in two Kampala suburbs are staying indoors today for a second straight day after some of them were attacked by Ugandans following the death of a popular local singer. Several houses were burned and an unknown number of people were injured in a series of attacks by motorists who are called Boda Boda. Uganda police are warning Ugandans not to take the law into their own hands. The state-owned New Vision newspaper reports that a stray bullet shot by a police officer hit that singer. Uganda police spokesman Patrick Onyango told reporters yesterday that a police officer has been arrested in connection with the investigation. Still, many angry supporters of the artist insist that South Sudanese are to blame for his death. 19-year-old James Ayuan says he took a commercial motorcycle ride with his friend from Kampala Center back home in Bwaze, a suburb south of the city. He says at that center they were confronted by a mob. He says he was ambushed by the mob, who then attacked him. He was later taken to a nearby health facility by relatives for a cut forehead. And finally, security personnel have detained journalist Joseph Afandi, an editor at the month-old Arabic daily El Tabir in Juba. Afandi was detained yesterday for allegedly criticizing the government. That, according to Alfred Taban, who chairs the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, or AMDIS. Taban says the government is very angry about an article which was published shortly after Christmas in which the editor accused the government officials of not doing their jobs. Taban also says plainclothes security personnel detained Afandi sometime last night. He says the security officials refused to produce any identification. Taban says up to now they do not know which branch of security has detained Afandi. Taban says the paper has been ordered to stop publication. Ramadan Shajar, who is in charge of media security for the South Sudanese government, told Taban that they would look into the issue once the government offices reopen after the New Year holiday. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. That's our show for this Wednesday. We leave you with the song Anna Maskin by Southern King.
Ana kore walele mama kore walele baba kore walele ana kore walele ana kore walele mama kore walele kalamu ta dunia mama zirufu ta dunia baba yali fisika piganisha machine zirufu Ligana kalam gurushio ena type ai mamayo adana type suma mamayo iden type shaka mamayo kura type toro mamayo ana basa ditala ta iyo malita gamula na zedeyo ana basa ditala ta iyo malita gamula na zedeyo
ana kore wadede mama kore wadede baba kore wadede Anakore walele, mama kore walele,
mama biru wale gaba, biru wakata pikasha, mama biri jamingaba, beja inu iyalu, dakulu kala maisha, tanini tala wara, tanimbika tala masha, tanimbika
Mama kore walele.
We've been listening to Southern King with the song Ana Maskin. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
And I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.